my side, hope for a generation.
Something so true is what I get from you.
Friends, countrymen, fellow slaves of the plantation, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. So get ready to laugh, get ready to listen, and be prepared to learn. Because although your enslavement is serious business, it doesn't mean you have to take it seriously. Here's your host, the indubitable Vinnie Eastwood.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. And my guests will be turning up shortly. They're just getting some very important documentation finished. It's going to be Dr. Rima Labo from drrimatruthreports.com. I believe she's also got a show on the network, either on or up and coming, her with another natural doctor who's practicing medicine that is kind of outside of the mainstream and a little bit, shall we say, threatening to pharmaceutical drug cartel profits. And as we, or people should know, recently there have been a number of disappearances and deaths of relatively high-profile natural medicine practicing doctors. Don't have the full details, but it's kind of fits the narrative of they kind of bump people off if they're a little bit too threatening, you know? And the fact that we now have a, shall we say, a more observant alternative media in some respects, these things are now getting exposed and reported on and talked about, not in the mainstream media generally, if they can help it. Sometimes they get forced to do it because there's just so much of a kerfuffle about it and everybody knows about it. And if they don't report on it, then it becomes so obvious to everybody that they're corrupt. And I can't fathom why it isn't so obvious that the mainstream media are corrupt and don't tell people important things already. You know, what do they have to do, bro? how much is enough? How long can you sit there watching it, listening to it, knowing that it's a lie, and continuing to watch it and listen to it? Mm-hmm. You got to throw your televisions out. You really do. I mean, honestly, the internet's your only refuge at this point. You can't even get cable TV with decent television stations that'll expose scumbaggery, you know, and deliver decent news and quality documentaries and whatnot. Man, wouldn't that be wicked? An entire online television station that you can like hook through with cable TV and that kind of thing that actually does show truth of documentaries and television shows, even, you know, movies that have a conspiratorial element to them, that kind of thing, because truth is like to be entertained just as much as everybody else does, because hey, we, if anything, if not more, we require an even stronger distraction from reality because it's just so clear and present, isn't it? Don't deny it. You know that you smoke weed every day because you hate your life and you hate your job and you can't stand the media and stuff like that just to tone it down. You know you get really, really drunk on occasion just because you're so pissed off about everything. You know that you drink coffee like I can't even think of an analogy. What drinks a lot of coffee? A radio show host. There you go. Kind of giving something away there. You're kind of drinking coffee to the point where your adrenal glands are stressing out to the point that, you know, they can't be stimulated anymore without caffeine. And you're so tired, and even to give them up is like giving up heroin, and you get the headaches and things of that nature. You see? Distracting yourself from reality and getting yourself out of your physical bounds and barriers and things of that nature is something that we're doing as kind of like this survival matrix, aren't we? You know? You got to work. You got to put up with all this crap. Stupid people, etc. It's the worst. There's no escaping it either. You can only dull the pain. And I know it's very hard for absolutely everybody. I understand. You know, some people will be like, oh, I don't use drugs or anything like that. But you got some form of escapism, don't you? What are you playing video games? Are you watching movies all the time? Are you meditating? You know, some habits are healthier than others. Doesn't matter what you're doing. Escapism and that kind of thing is something we're all attuned to a large degree. Now, I'm not saying I don't subscribe to the concept of escapism. I embrace it openly because in my work time hours, I'm creating alternative escapism for other people. You know, you don't have to sit down and get really stressed out about things because you can listen to this and hear me getting really stressed out about an awful lot of things. And it's the whole idea behind keeping you sane as well. I mean, I'm not trying to tell you what you're thinking. I'm just expressing my opinion. And the fact that people keep listening to me, it means that my opinion must be on the money sometimes. And the reason for this platform, which has been quite a struggle to produce, you know, it's a pretty intensive gig. But the reason why I struggle to produce it and make sure it keeps getting out there is if you don't have a voice that resonates with you in the media, you start to think like you're the only one who's thinking what you're thinking, especially if you don't have friends or co-workers or family members or things like that who are gelling with this kind of information. You can start to go nuts if there isn't a voice that represents your views. Because whenever you watch the media, it doesn't represent your views, does it? And when you go crazy at the TV, you're wondering if people believe this stuff. You're wondering if you're the only one who thinks what you think. And then you feel like you're all alone, and you get really angry at all the stupid people who believe the media. You start to hold a pin on your fellow man. You start to get angry. You start to make assumptions and deductions about how everybody's living their life, how much fluoride is in their bloods, you know, how many vaccines they've had, that kind of thing. How much television they're watching, how much money they're giving to their bankers. You know, you become a really cynical person all of a sudden. And it's not good, because that kind of hate and anger will gestate inside you and it'll come out of you like a chest burster. All right. You can't be stressed and like blaming all the ordinary sheeple, as people call them. I don't like to call, you know, ordinary people that just haven't awakened to the sheep. You know, it's kind of like a negative thing, as if you never were a sheep. And if you were a sheep and you admit that to you, what did you transmorph into? Did you transform into a horse? Some kind of stoat? Some form of a badger? You know, I'm not a sheep, I'm a badger. I've got my badger of honor. See, it doesn't make any sense, does it, that kind of analogy? Because you're trying to dehumanize people who were once like you. All right? Well, strike that, reverse it. People who you were once like. Dude, I once had like belt buckles that were encrusted with cubic zirconias and a giant silver dollar sign. All right? I had a $100 bill belt buckle. I had flashy stuff. And frankly, I spent a lot of money on stuff that I didn't need. And I spent a lot of time working on things that weren't fulfilling. That there's basically no record, recompense, or anything after it's happened other than money. And the money gets spent on things that don't matter, so what was the point in it? I couldn't live like that. I started to get so stressed out that I had to quit my job, right? Didn't choose to. I just had to. It was driving me insane. And I knew that I couldn't get another job, you know? Not one where I've got a boss and they're looking over me and that kind of thing and bossing me around and time cards and codes and pay packets and weekly paychecks and all of that kind of stuff, developed a phobia for the whole lot of it. And I think that was because I was getting crazy, right? I was starting to get crazy because I was watching too much media and too much alternative media at the same time. Created a schism in my mind that made me unable to cope with my life because my entire attention was focused upon things that weren't my life. They were focused on the world, and I didn't know my place in it. Anybody else felt like that? I thought so. You're thinking too much about the world, and you're not trying to find your place within it. That's what people's problem is. You know, when you're 18 years old, your parents don't come to you and you go, okay, now you're the adult, you have to be your own parent. You know, what do you mean I have to be my own parent? Well, you know how we force you to go to bed at a certain time so that you don't wake up too tired to go to school? Yeah, well, you got to force yourself to go to bed early enough so that you get up and you're not too tired to go to work. Hmm? You know how we force you to do your chores and things like that? Keep your room clean, do the dishes, do your washing, hang it out, bring it back in, fold it, put it away in your closet. You know how we do all that stuff? Yeah. Well, you're going to have to force yourself to do that now. Every single thing that your parents have been protecting you from or forcing you to do, you now have to do as an adult, right? And because nobody realizes that, we have this outbreak of childlike people, right? The maturity level's just gone, right? See, that's what happens when you don't have a rite of passage, when you don't have a ritual that suddenly says, now you're an adult. And all the things that actually are entailed with that. I was speaking with Freder X before the show on Facebook there, and he just got finished doing, you know, a couple of days work in a kitchen, you know, sweating and cooking and that kind of thing. And work's a curse. Really, it's kind of like a cancer. But when you've got children to feed, that's the thing. The unwritten rule of parenting is, with any decision that affects your life, you come second now. Okay? That's as far as I've learned. I'm not a parent yet. Can't wait to be. But until then, I'm trying to understand what the level of responsibility for it is. And as far as I've worked out so far, it's an all-encompassing one, you know? And I think maybe that's the absence of that has forced me to look inwards, okay, become a bit more selfish. And maybe that's what happens when you get a little bit older and you don't have any children, you don't actually have a huge responsibility on your table. Your maturity is stunted in a way. And so you're forced thereby to compensate for that immaturity by learning things from people who are older and wiser than you, doing a lot of introspection, learning about who it is and what it is that you are, what your potentials are, you know, what your limits are, what your fears are. And I remember my mate Louis, I said something along the line, oh, I just can't do that. I just can't do that. He said, you shouldn't use the word can't, you know, it's just bad. It's a bad word. And I go, okay, jump 10 feet in the air. He says, I can't. I say, exactly. Some things you just can't do, bro. Okay. If you're, but there are things that, you know, in fact, where I was going with that doesn't need to be gone into. Just find out who you are. Find out where you fit in the universe. Find out what makes you happy. And then fucking do it. You know? Just do it. You're going to have to risk everything in your life a number of times, and you're going to have to endure hardships if you really commit to something. For me, it's been really hard getting this radio show on the road and keeping it on air and doing all this work and stuff. It's just, yeah, it's a nightmare sometimes, but I can't really see myself doing anything else. I really don't want to do anything else. And I feel like that obligation that drove me in the first place was driven out of knowing what it was that I didn't want. You know? It's kind of like how you can figure out who your real friends are sometimes. Speaking of real friends, here's Dr. Rima Labo just joining us now.
Hi, Vinny. How are you?
You're sounding a little bit washed out there. Have you got your headset on this time?
I have my headset on. How's that?
That's much, much better.
Excellent. Yeah. I've just literally, in the last 10 seconds, finished doing a podcast with Adam Crabb on the Kraz Files and with Ralph Yusitola, my co-host on my show and my co-trustee in the Natural Solutions Foundation, literally this second. So I'm rolling over to you. How are you?
This is kind of like one of those pillow talk moments, you know?
Exactly.
Roll over from them and onto you.
Yes.
Well, I was talking just before you came on the show about when I quit my job and decided that it was all too much and I had to actually abandon my entire life, and how the entire planet is basically infected by this realm of immaturity, either because of a lack of responsibilities or that kind of thing. Like having children, for example, makes you into a very responsible person if you naturally are one quite bloody quickly, doesn't it? Because it's an all-encompassing responsibility that kind of affects every area of your life. And I tried to relate that to how it affects people's in the truth movement and what kind of a responsibility they have to their audience, to their shows, and to the networks they're on, that kind of things. Just something to think about.
Well, that's very, very interesting. Of course, the choice to be a truth teller is...
You've got your microphone right in front of your mouth. If you just pull it down to your
that?
Chin, it stops with the
How's
popping
that?
Sound.
Better, is better. That better?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. By the way, Ralph is available if you'd like him to join us. That's your choice.
We're still having a little bit of a problem with your microphone there, a little
okay.
bit of a pop sound, I guess. But anyway, yeah, if Ralph wants to join us, I guess that might be okay.
Okay. Would you like me to add him to this call?
Oh no, I'll just get the studio to do it so they can suss that one out. Yeah, he'll be with us momentarily, but yeah, we've got to get your microphone sorted out there. Is it right in front of your mouth?
How's that?
It kind of needs to be down underneath your chin sort of thing when it's
underneath my chin. How about that?
Yeah.
We're doing better?
Can you say put pasta and potatoes and pot?
Put pasture and potatoes in the pot.
All right, excellent. Now that's much better. Ralph, welcome to the program.
Hello.
We are just stumbling into a little bit of a discussion here about kind of.
Actually, it's a very interesting discussion.
Are you taping or are you recording?
Yeah, we are live.
Oh, you're live! Awesome. I'm happy to be with you.
Yeah, we're live. So are you. That's what the gig is. And what we were talking about is kind of the responsibility of parenting, how it's all encompassing and how it kind of like matures you a lot. And nowadays we've got people having a lot of kids later, and maybe they're lacking in that maturity. And I'm starting to see a propensity towards people try get into escapism a hell of a lot, and they're abdicating a lot of their responsibilities, even people in the truth movement itself not being perhaps as responsible as that is.
How are you seeing that, Vinny? That's a very interesting observation. How are you observing people moving into escapism who should be moving into effective activism?
Oh, I'm not saying they should be doing anything along that note. I was mostly talking about from personal experience how I kind of moved through a lot of phases of this and then came into what I'm in now, but maybe even still suffering from those residual effects. And I'm just wondering, is it really actually affecting a lot of other people? Or is it just me? Because it seems to be a very massive societal build, and the trying to come to terms with who you are and what your place in the world is when you're listening to so much information about the world itself, so complex that finding your place in it kind of leaves you lost. And that's when a lot of people kind of give up, maybe get depressed, and then try to numb the pain a bit, by getting really drunk on the weekends just to kind of forget about it.
You know, there's a tremendous amount of very difficult information to handle, to process, to understand, to connect, if you're going to understand what's going on. Because what's going on is complex and is has a whole series of spheres of threat interlinked. And it's difficult to sort out. It's emotionally very, very wearing and tearing. And it's something that any sane person would want to not know about, would want to protect themselves from. And yet there's a deeper level of sanity. And I'm speaking both as an activist, a human being, and a psychiatrist. And human beings and psychiatrists are not always coterminous. But there is a point at which there's a deeper kind of protection that requires tolerating discomfort, tolerating negative input in order to find a greater comfort, in order to find a greater safety, not only for yourself, but also altruistically for other people whom you don't know, whom you'll never meet. And that's, I think that is one way of defining maturity. So it takes a kind of emotional hardiness to be willing to do that. It's hard. It's frightening. It's overwhelming. And if you're going to be an adult in your own life and on the world stage, you really don't have a choice. What would you say about that, Ralph?
Don't have a choice. The only logical choice is to assert your freedom. We've been talking, and Dr. Rima and I were just on the CRAS reports coming out of Australia. Isn't it amazing? Dr. Rima is in Santiago, which is, by the way, 6,000 miles away from where I am in northeast New Jersey, near New York City. 50 miles from New York City. And of course, Vinny, you're in New Zealand, probably another 6,000 miles away from Rima in the other direction. And yet we are talking about these issues. And we were talking about these issues a little while ago and talking about asserting your rights. And I think that we are seeing a strategy develop here. That's what I think is going on, Dr. Rima.
What do you mean?
Strategy for freedom. And the strategy for freedom is that people around the world are joining together to assert their right to be free from the type of medical tyranny that we see developing around us. That's it.
Well, it's not just medical tyranny, but medical tyranny is a tool for the deeper tyranny.
Which is a sort of mind control tyranny, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, again, as Rima said, it's a multifaceted spheres of influence here, and this is why I've kind of tried to popularize the term scumbaggery, because it actually is an all-encompassing term that embodies all the behaviors, the actions, and the motives and the portents of the scumbags.
Scumbaggery is a wonderful phrase, and I actually first learned it from you. It was one of the delights of talking to you the very first time. I thought, scumbaggery, what a wonderful phrase, and it's self-explanatory. You don't need anybody to define it in depth, because you understand it intuitively. You understand what scumbaggery means. The question is scumbaggery a deep enough phrase, or are we talking about piece of shittery?
We're talking about a worldwide conspiracy to depopulate the planet. That's what we're talking about, actually.
And the only people who would want that are clearly scumbags. So ultimately, we're dealing with a very basically a population that is prone to misinterpreting things and making things up, and also not listening and also they need to be entertained, and they've got a very short attention span. So there's only one way to comprise the conspiracy in all its particular elements in a very vague and general way that can fit in within those parameters, and that is the word scumbaggery. Because people know it, they feel it, and they laugh at it because it's a funny kind of sounding word, but it sticks in the mind. And also, you can go on and you can start to think about scumbaggery. You can start to learn about it, you know. And
tell us about the history of scumbaggery. When did you understand that the term scumbaggery needed to be part of the dialogue, the discourse, and how did it come upon you, oh scumbaggery creator?
Well, it dates back to 2008 when I used to call people scum or scumbags quite a lot. And one time during a protest, I shouted through a megaphone that John Key is a scumbag, responsible for inordinate quantities of scumbaggery. And that was the first usage of the word that I can really recollect, because, you know, scumbaggery is a natural progression from scumbag, you know, just after the fact, a description of the behavior, a non-definite article. And it occurred to me that because scumbags engage in scumbaggery, the usage of the term scumbag became obsolete, because it wasn't individual scumbags that we were necessarily after. It was their behavior, it was their concepts, it was all of the things that represented and embodied scumbaggery. The individual scumbags themselves were just vessels.
Ah, I see.
Indeed.
You know, on a certain level, by calling them scumbags to their faces, as it were, you do deflate the presumption of omnipotence that the modern state attempts to invoke. You know, it's just people engaging in human action, but they want to pretend they are somehow, you know, clothed in the majesty of the state, as though that were not the greatest scumbaggery of all. The state does not act. The state does not put a needle in my arm. A specific nurse or FEMA agent or doctor puts the needle in my arm. Human action only is engaged in by humans and not by collective nouns. Collective nouns can do nothing. Only individual people can, pull the lever on the guillotine, as it were.
And that piece of information is so important that it literally opens the door to control the scumbaggery and keep it outside your skin in a very specific way, because individual people will push the plunger on the vaccine. Those individual people are liable to charges, legal charges, criminal charges of malpractice, of assault, of battery, of crimes against humanity, if they violate your asserted human rights. Now, you may say, well, nobody cares about that. Yeah, the individual person who is noticed that they are going to be guilty of a crime if they vaccinate you because you have asserted your legally protected human right to informed consent in an appropriate and legal way with something called the Advanced Vaccine Directive card. Once you do that, if they come at you with their syringe, then they are going to be criminally liable, as I said. And it is the individual who acts, as Ralph said, not the state that reacts. And the individual can be redirected and deflected away from putting a syringe under your skin by, frankly, a legally strengthened threat. And the threat is, you touch me with that damn syringe, you are going to jail.
Yeah, and this is why I came up with the idea for the Department of Scumbaggery, which would be a new government department with these sweeping powers. Now, these powers only allow them to do things like issue subpoenas and make arrests, but they have to fulfill a certain threshold. If you're going after scumbaggery, there are usually individuals and organizations and things like that that are behind certain levels of responsibility so that they can pawn off pieces of meat and things like that. The Department of Scumbaggery is not going to be subject to those little things. They're not going to be satisfied with a little piece of meat. They're going to go after the big cheese, the head honchos, and they're going to get all of the people that are actually engaging in scumbaggery and arrest them, subpoena them, give them a fair trial. And these are things like government departments, the judiciary, Fortune 500 companies that are operating in the country in question that the Department of Scumbaggery has jurisdiction, that sort of thing. Because in my opinion, the reason why scumbaggery is allowed to get so powerful and so strong is nobody's actually got the power to bring them to justice. Now, in order to prevent anybody from corruptly using these kind of mechanisms to take people out that they're simply political opponents of and that kind of thing, the staffing has to be people with a track record of self-sacrifice for the public good, and they're going to get paid very little, and there's going to be no lobbying opportunities, because the only time that you're going to be talking to somebody from the Department of Scumbaggery is if they're investigating you, and you're definitely not going to try and bribe them because you can't buy them. Provide that kind of self-seal blanket burrito of scumbaggery exposure, you know?
I'd like to do a little thought experiment with you. Physicists love thought experiments because they can think up all kinds of very expensive or impossibly difficult things to do, and they can't do them for practical reasons, but they can use their mental imagination to run the experiment and see what happens. So I'd like to do a little thought experiment with you. How many people are there in New Zealand?
4.5 million.
Okay, 4.5 million. Let us, and how many of them are children? Perhaps a third?
I'd probably say about 1.2 million.
1.2 million. So we've got roughly about 3 million people who are adults in New Zealand, right?
Depending on your definition of adult, I would also...
chronologically,
they're of adult age.
They're of adult age, yes, exactly. Now, of those 3 million people, let us assume that half of them do not wish to be vaccinated, and half of them do not wish, and among that half, those who are parents do not wish their children to be vaccinated. So let's say half of the children, the 1-point-something million children, have parents who don't want them to be vaccinated. Let's just make this assumption. Now, we have 1.5 million people who want another 500,000 people not to be vaccinated. So we have about 2 million folks, children folks and chronologically adult folks, who are in the I don't want to be vaccinated category, okay, in this thought experiment. Now, if they're all sort of saying, gee willikers, I don't want to be vaccinated, but there's not anything I can do about it, and the scumbags who are bringing the scumbaggery to me are in charge, so I'll just sort of whine about it a little and let the chips fall where they may, including the nano chips that are in the vaccines. If that happens, there's one outcome. But suppose that half of those people, 1 million people, had taken the step to provide themselves with the legally protected right asserted through the Advanced Vaccine Directive card, so that when anybody came at them, they would whip out their card or pull it out of the baby's diaper bag or whatever and say, halt, I am asserting my legally protected right to informed consent. And if you come at me or my baby or my child with a vaccine syringe, I will bring criminal charges against you. Trespass, assault, battery, crime against humanity, lots of tort in there. And it's not a Linzer tort or a chocolate tort. It's a financial tort. If half of the people in New Zealand...
Hold on one second there. Ralph, could you mute, please? It's kind of distracting.
Oh, I'm sorry. What's going on?
If half of the people in New Zealand were aware and had taken this step to protect themselves, what do you think would happen to the state owns your body, we're going to vaccinate you anytime and in any way we think, and by the way, we're going to do anything else we want to your body? What do you think would happen? Something, anything, nothing?
Well, something would happen.
What?
Probably be a hell of a lot of people who were dead scared to be in that job. There'd be mass protests. I think there'd be also a large quantity of propaganda being flooded through the airwaves. It'd be in every hospital. There'd be massive billboards. There'd be a huge scramble by all the pharmaceutical companies supported by the government, vice versa, rather, to convince those 1.5 million people that they're wrong. And there'd be simultaneous campaigning to convince the remaining 2 or 3 million people, rather, that those 1.5 million people and their children are dangerous. And
putting them in jeopardy, absolutely. But the pushback, assuming we have the internet, the pushback would be immense, and the dialogue would be highly, highly energized. To me, that's a very good thing.
It would be. I'm just kind of thinking about how, what kind of waves it would get shut down, right? In fact, maybe that's a propensity that I have now. Before and maybe that's a problem. Before you take a step, you start to play a little bit of game theory, and you think about how your enemy would strike back against your actions. How many different avenues would they hit back at you with your one hit out? And how do you structure your weapon to ensure that it can pierce their armor?
Exactly. So you're already thinking about countermeasures and countermeasures before you take any measures. That's not game theory. That is military intelligence.
Okay, there you go. Well, we are fighting a war to a degree.
We are fighting a war. Absolutely. Let me read you something from an article on global research. The article is called, and I just sent you the link to this, Google degenerates into Ministry of Truth. All knowledge must now be pre-approved by their search algorithms. And let me read you what this article says. It says, concerning natural health and alternative medicine, Google has already written code into its search algorithm that censors out, quote, anti-vaccine websites like Natural Solutions principal website, drremaTruthReports.com, for example, as well as other resources categorized as purveying, are you ready, misinformation. Using the new Knowledge Vault protocol, Google is likely to begin censoring other topics as well. Now, Google has already, this is so scary, Google has already implemented its new truth, quote, algorithm for medical searches with disturbing consequences, according to Rebecca Terrell for The New American. She says, truth, according to Google, means that anti-vaccination websites no longer make the cut, despite the fact that recently released federal statistics reveal the risk to children's health posed by vaccines is overwhelmingly greater than that posed by the diseases these medications are formulated to combat. She also, or the article also goes on to say that censorship brings scientific progress to a grinding halt. Anything that Google considers to be inaccurate, based on what? based on the corporation and the state own your body, and any science that makes that sound like not a good idea is inaccurate.
It's like making Wikipedia the Ministry of Truth.
Yes, it is, except Wikipedia at least has an open framework where some people can get in there and muck about. Google has a closed framework.
Well, and also it's a private corporation that makes its own decisions, exactly. And also goes to Bilderberg group meetings with their CEO and things of this nature. And also part of the New Zealand Infrastructure Initiative, along with another bunch of multinational corporations who are currently advising the government, i.e. telling the government what to spend all their money and all their infrastructural development on. I wonder what that's going to be for. Why, would it by chance be stack 'em and pack 'em, little slave blocks along railroad tracks in megacities connected by superhighways, and force everybody off the fucking land? Hmm? I thought so.
Why, yes, by gum, it would be. Yes.
Well, what could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? Exactly. And so when we talk about the Advanced Vaccine Directive at DrRemaTruthReports.com, we're not just talking about vaccination. We're talking about quite literally becoming a freedom fighter for your own genetic integrity and the integrity of your right to live your own life on your own terms. That's what's at stake. This is no small matter. It would be big enough if it were only about vaccines and who controls what goes into your body, but it's about the entire globalist enslavement. This week, a professor from New York University revealed his plans to combat global warming by manipulating children in their very, very earliest years to make sure that they were hormonally treated to stay small, or even better, having all fertilizations be in vitro and then enhancing those genes that make people small and turning off those genes that make people tall. And oh, by the way, of course, we don't know very much about what those genes do in every other regard, but it really doesn't matter because you're going to be diseased, damaged, and dead anyway.
Dr. Rima, this is just straight from Brave New World, isn't it?
Straight from Brave New World.
And 1984, which were incidentally both written by, what were they? They were either members
Fabian Socialists.
They were members of the Fabian Socialist Club who came up with this plan for world domination, and they wrote these books to just kind of pre-program everybody and go, this is actually the way it's going to be. You know, they weren't warning you. They were preparing you for it.
Exactly. Let me point out that in 1922, Nobel Prize-winning mathematician Bertrand Russell, who was a Fabian socialist, they were very bad dudes, the Fabian socialists, and unfortunately, although the term has passed out of our social history, their ilk are still with us. The Fabian socialist Bertrand Russell said, through injunction, injection, and indoctrination, the ordinary man will be unable to form an independent thought. Injunction, injection, and indoctrination. Common Core takes care of the indoctrination. The vaccine program is working hard on the injection end. An injunction, that's propaganda. You must not think forbidden thoughts. You must only trust the scumbaggery, the ministry of scumbaggery. We're here to help.
I think this is also one thing to really note as well, because you don't realize that not only is there a false left and right, but there's also a false alternative opposition left and right as well. Have you noticed that, Rima?
There's a false what? I couldn't hear you.
Well, you know how there's a false left wing and a false right wing, like the Democrats and Republicans?
Yes.
But then there's also these false candidates within the Republicans that are supposed to be representing liberty when they only represent scumbaggery, right? Just to throw people off the scent. And then there's these false candidates in sort of like the leftist kind of spectrum as well that are touting all this stuff and also deliver absolutely nothing, right? It's like it's like Russian dolls, basically. There's just so much scumbaggery that when the hell are we going to get to that last doll, you know, when there's actually somebody with integrity that wants to run your country? And the answer is there will never be anyone of integrity that wants to run your country because people of integrity don't want to run other people's lives.
You know, I first noticed this when I was in medical school. It occurred to me that the very worst people in the world became the department heads because the decent people didn't want to run other people's lives and weren't willing to kiss posteriors and sacrifice their own integrity. It was only the least psychologically and emotionally decent people who wanted to do that. And so they self-selected for the worst qualities. That was when I was in medical school. And that was only the tip of the tip of the tip of the iceberg that you're talking about.
Yeah, precisely. And the thing about scumbaggery is it's got a pattern formation. So if you see an instance of scumbaggery somewhere, you can actually see a recurring pattern that not only happens within that organization from the top down, but that pattern also occurs in completely different organizations that have nothing to do with it. They're actually run in more or less the exact same way. And I think maybe sometimes we believe that all of these things are connected, but one thing that really gave me pause for thought was New Zealand author and journalist Ian Wishart describing it as a shark feeding frenzy. Every shark has its own agenda and its own, you know, best interests at heart. They appear to be working together, but that's only because they all share the same target, us.
That is correct. They will tear each other apart given the opportunity. The problem is that there are so many of them in ranks and rows and files ready to leap in.
Wait. I had a brilliant idea the other day. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I have to do it before I forget it. The only way to really destabilize psychopaths is to get them to hate and fear and distrust each other. All right, same thing they've been doing to us, the whole divide and conquer, because I figured out over a couple of brushes, I think maybe I've tried to expose four psychopaths unsuccessfully, and I realized what it was. I play by rules of morality, rules of logic, rules of honor, and that kind of thing. They don't play by those kind of rules, and so nothing but somebody who plays by the same kind of rules can destroy them. So what if you implicate, let's say you've got two psychopaths, in the media or something like that, you start a rumor that one of them's actually trying to undermine the other one, and then you go to the other one and you say that, and you start a rumor with him that the other guy's trying to undermine him, right? So that they both believe that they're enemies, and they will destroy each other, and all you had to do was whisper in their ears.
Yeah, but they'll also destroy you along the way.
Well, which is important, why it needs to remain completely anonymous and undetectable, right? You can't go out and be visible. You can't be a person that actually had that conversation.
Psychopaths are, in my experience, psychopaths are a little bit harder to destroy than that.
They're psychic, basically.
Because they're psychopaths, right. And they affiliate with no one except as a matter of convenience. They already hate and fear and distrust not only other psychopaths, but everybody. Because by definition, a psychopath has no affiliation with anyone under any circumstances except as they perceive it serves their own best interest, and that is completely without any loyalty or any history. I could be totally affiliated with you today, but if I'm a psychopath, then I am within the twinkling of an eye completely disloyal and unaffiliated with you. I already, if I'm a psychopath, hate and fear everybody else on the planet anyway.
My question is it even possible to direct that destructive activity back on other psychopaths and things like that as an outsider?
Energetically, yes. Ralph, what do you think about this? Ralph may be muted.
He definitely is, in fact. Either that or he walked out
I've
to take
been
a
saying all leak. Sorts of interesting things for the past couple of minutes. And I'm just going to listen for a while. That's what I'm going
to do. Well, we're talking about whether it's possible to control psychopaths by having them turn on each other in hate and fear. And my point is they already hate and fear each other.
Right. Watch, that famous photo of Donald Trump hamming it up with the Clintons. I'm sure if they could have stabbed each other in the back, they would have.
Well, obviously they can't do that in public. See, this is the thing. It has to be like really, really shadowy and kind of deceptive and under the radar and kind of devious, basically. Like just such a devious plan that neither the psychopaths or their lackeys could escape it. That's what I'm talking about, Something that can be run in the background that nobody even knows is happening, like a counter-conspiracy of sabotage and intelligence gathering and undermining regimes and certain people and stuff like that, like a goal so overt and so evil that basically everybody who has to even take part in it would just have to go like, okay, once this is over, we have to drop out of society. We really can't be a part of it anymore because we're just too freaking evil. We're going to have to go live in like wood in a lodge in the woods or something like that for the rest of our days because society really doesn't want to ever see again what we just had to perpetrate.
Well, what I'm not sure that any logical behavior will control a psychopath. The only thing that controls a psychopath is not giving them the opportunity to be in any position of power.
Yeah.
Isolating them, surrounding them with impotence, if you will, and removing them from any seat of power or opportunity to gain control of anything.
Yeah. Now, how exactly do we do that? Because they're so difficult to detect. Even people who are experts in psychopathy can take years giving a psychopath therapy before being able to make a consistent diagnosis because they know
there
that
is
they're,
no
they're,
therapy. There is no therapy for a psychopath.
No. I mean, like in therapy and some stuff like that, he suspects the person's a psychopath but doesn't know.
Exactly. They're very, very, very difficult to detect. I was married to one for 27 years. They're very difficult to detect. No question about that. Only once
they strike. Now, actually, may I for a second here. It's the responsibility of everybody who's been fucked over by a psychopath to put something online about it. About that person, about what they did to you, so that there is a track record, right? So that anybody who comes up through the ranks and starts to get into kind of scumbaggery organization, anybody could just Google up your name and know all about you before you've even had a chance to steal something from
them. That's a bit of a 2 or 6 or 22-edged sword, Vinny. For example, if you Google my name, Rima Ilebo, MD, you will find the most god-awful stuff about me, about what a terrible person I am, about how I'm an Illuminati member, about how I'm a pharma shill, da-da-da-da-da-da. The disinformation folks have been working hard. They lie.
They do. They absolutely do. And you can tell when somebody's lying on an article because when they make a claim, they don't supply the supplementary evidence and the dates and the documents and the things like that that really nail it and hammer it home as absolutely true. And it's not up to conjecture and it's not up to somebody's opinion. When it's absolutely factual, that's when you know somebody's telling the truth, because they'll have the evidence right there as they're claiming it, rather than the shills and BS people, a lot of which are online. We'll have none of that. We'll be right back after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio.
Institution.
American Freedom Radio.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide. Only at HempUSA.org.
American Freedom Radio is back. We're trying to become commercial free, apart from a few honorable advertisers that we would give ad space to even if they couldn't pay us. In this quest to deliver quality radio with very few annoying ads, we are now asking the listeners like you to open up and become partners with American Freedom Radio. We all know the economy is controlled, and a new system called the peer-to-peer economy is now within our grasp. That means if you'd like this network with its incredible hosts and credible information to be nothing but the content you want to hear, then you must realize that you cannot be a part of it if you're just sitting on the sidelines watching. Go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and pledge your support today. Donate according to your means. Some can only afford $1 a month, while others can afford $100 a month. Regardless of the size of your contribution, it all adds up to keeping the network owners and the radio hosts housed and fed at the end of every month. Thank you.
We are living in a new era. Partnerships are more important than profit, and gratitude is more respected than greed. As the millennial generation evolves the corporate landscape, our company aims to maximize the achievements of CBD application and push the limits of what's possible by 2020. Our core product matrix and careful cannabidiol purification process are uniquely designed to be privately made in different regions of the world, and is geared to assist the efforts of different nations to change the landscape of various pain-related healthcare costs, epilepsy and autism, rising mental disorders, and even soldier suicides. Crystal Pure CBD is made with the industry's finest 99.9% pure CBD crystals. No paste, no filler. Our solution is a permanent answer, and it saves you over one-third in cost. Crystal Pure CBD. Come join us.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest, and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccine, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.
For some reason, you stumbled across the second hour of the Vinny Eastwood show. I hope you don't take it too seriously, man. Vinny certainly doesn't. So sit back, enjoy the complimentary GMO marijuana and fluoridated cerveza, and embrace the probability of your imminent death. Now here's your host, the Chicano from the North Island, Vinny Eastwood.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? And my very special guests are from the Dr. Rima Truth Reports, the Natural Solutions Foundation, Dr. Rima Labo, MD, and Ralph Fusatola. Is he also an MD? Have you got like a little characteristics?
No, he's a JD. He's a JD.
What on earth is a JD?
A Juris Doctor.
Well, it's a good thing. What it is it's really simple. The law schools used to give out bachelor's of law degrees, and then they required people to go to undergraduate college first before being allowed to get into law school. And so then they decided, well, if it's a second degree, it should, for the proper prestige, it should be a doctor of law degree, a Juris Doctor. Now, in the past, Juris Doctor was basically an academic degree, someone who was a scholar of the law, as opposed to someone who was a practicing lawyer. As a retired practicing lawyer, consider myself much more of a scholar of the law these days, and I'm happy to use my academic degree, JD, instead of the traditional Esquire, which practicing lawyers use.
Well, so it's kind of like Freemasonry. The more degrees you get, the more fancy the title becomes.
Oh, yes, exactly.
Now, is it true, Ralph, is it true that lawyers who sit for the bar exams and are admitted to the bar are, in fact, expressing their loyalty to the Queen of England? This rages around the internet. Is that true?
No. Uh-huh. You know, and a lot of those crazy things that rage around the internet are taken care of by our good friend Larry B. Kraft, the dean of the American Patriot Lawyers, in his website, which is highway.net or something like that. But you look him up, Larry B. Kraft, and he goes over a lot of that stuff. But, you know, if you just read the Treaty of Peace between the United Kingdom and the United States from 1787 or 89, whatever it was, 83, and look at it. I mean, the King of England is absolutely resigning all sovereignty over the colonies. It's clear language, but people don't want to believe clear language, apparently.
Yeah, well, obviously, we're in an age where there's so much misinformation out there. It's a wonder anybody knows anything for real.
No one knows anything for real.
I don't know, bro.
All we have are our own opinions, and that's why there is no settled science, you know. There is no settled law. There's only changing opinions.
I wonder how long it's going to take for the opinion to change that if you get shot in the face with a shotgun that you, like, live, you know. If people could, you know, because reality is a very simple thing. For me, there's 3D reality, these things with these kind of defined laws that you just go around in your daily life. Then there's experimental 3D reality where you're playing with stuff that you don't know the effect of yet, new elements, new devices, things like that, how they operate in this environment. And then on the other hand, you've got all possibilities, you know, which a lot of the time is information, facts, history, et cetera, things that you think are true, but may have just been the clever manipulation of people if you haven't done the proper research and backed up with varying sources that weren't financially linked and didn't have any contact with each other, and they all verified the same thing without any corroboration between them beforehand. Yeah, I think you can probably put that down in a fact file. But yeah, living life is something you've got to be really open to. And a lot of people basically aren't open. They're not aware that their belief systems are kind of like a baby's diaper, and you need to change them regularly, and for the same reason, because you're just full of shit, bro.
Vinny, how do you internally discriminate between truth and falsehood? What's your bullshit meter like?
My bullshit meter is, if it's anything to do with, oh, the world's about to end, yeah, it's kind of bullshit to get everybody's fears going and that kind of thing. Does it sound absolutely crazy? Then it's probably true. If it's if whatever the government's saying, if whatever they're doing, whatever the stated purpose is, the government or a major multinational corporation, it's closer to the opposite of their stated intention. And if you can't make it in your own kitchen with ingredients you can find, but it tastes really good, then it's a soft kill bioweapon.
Ralph, how do you discriminate truth, falsehood, and balderdash?
Well, I guess the first thing I do is I see how it feels. Does it feel truthful or does it not? Based on sort of my whole life experience. And then I also apply some basic principles. If it violates the way I think I understand how the world operates, you know, that's why that distinction in my mind between these legal fiction collective nouns and actual real human beings doing real things is an important one. And when I see people ascribing mystical powers to collective nouns around me, I get confused, and I assume that I'm not that I'm being dealt a hand of bull.
Wait, ascribing mystical powers to collective nouns. That is a fascinating phrase, and I need to know what it means.
All right. There's this idea that somehow we're no longer responsible for our actions if we are taking those actions as a public servant instead of as a private person. I don't know what happens in the concentration camps. My only job is to stamp the papers, you know, Auschwitz, 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 right? That's not my responsibility, what happens after they get on the train. It's the glory, you know, it's the leader who's doing this, not me. Stamp.
I'm just following order. Stamp, stamp, stamp.
Right. Okay, well, here's an even more interesting question than how you detect bullshit from a glance, right? But the better question is, what's the process by which you can realize that you've believed a certain kind of bullshit for a period of time, and now it's time to give up that belief?
That's a really good question.
That is indeed a very good question. And it starts with resistance, reluctance, and reaction, usually a negative reaction, usually an angry reaction or a lashing out reaction. Now, I'm having a very interesting dialogue. Maybe the dialogue is over at this point. But one of the people, actually somebody that we had on our radio show, is a Holocaust denier. And he said, if you are willing to entertain the truth, I will show you definitively why the Holocaust never happened, or not why it never happened, but why it is important to understand that the Holocaust never happened, that 238 Jews died in Nazi Germany, not 6 million, and nobody else, no significant number of people of other designations died either. The whole thing is a propaganda ploy, and so on. And I said, that feels completely untrue to me. I have a very strong visceral response based on several personal experiences, including knowing people who were tattooed on their arms and who were deeply traumatized when I was a child. I knew these people, including treating the victims of the Holocaust for their post-traumatic stress disorder and other deep problems, including treating their children and their grandchildren and seeing the contagious nature of the post-traumatic stress disorder and so on. I said, but although it feels wrong to me, I'm willing to listen. And he sent me some documents and some data, and I said, this doesn't feel right. This doesn't hold up scientifically. The person testifying that there were no gas chambers was charged with and convicted of criminal misrepresentation of himself as an engineer who was an expert in this, and accused of trying to blackmail several states around issues pertaining to lethal injections and electric chairs and so on. So this is a highly questionable source. And at that point, this guy got mad at me, and he said, well, your mind is closed. And I wrote back to him, and I said, no, my mind is open, but your data is weak. And his conclusion was, well, see, you're just brainwashed. And I thought, well, isn't this interesting? Because here's a perfect example of the discussion that needs to be had about how you evaluate data. And the fact that you disagree with somebody else doesn't mean that your mind is closed. But on the other hand, your mind might be closed because of your prior assumptions. It's a very active ballet, and you're always trying to be on point, because if you're not, you're flat-footedly wrong.
I find whenever you get angry, you get dumber, right? You're always at your brightest when you're clear-headed and you're thinking, and sometimes when you're happy and when you're excited, right? And
no, whenever you get angry, you get dumber. When I get angry, I get sharper. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, it shuts off a part of the higher brain function. I don't know exactly to what exact degree it happens each time. Depends on how angry you are, obviously. Because when do people generally do the stupidest things in their life? When they're really, really angry, do they regret it afterwards? Yes, they do. You know why they regret it afterwards? Because afterwards they calmed down and they thought about what a dick they'd been. Okay? Pretty straightforward. When you're angry and you're making decisions and you're having an argument, you got to stop there just for a second and go, am I angry because this belligerent, insulting, pain in the ass is right? Or are they just a belligerent, insulting, pain in the ass and they're also wrong? You know, ask yourself that kind of question. If you don't have that sort of a self-analysis, regardless of how offensive people are, regardless of how things come across, I found that it's important to question why you're having an emotional reaction to it. What is the reason? What is the source for it? Because we often have emotional reactions to things, and seldom do we ask why it actually triggered something. Why is it that strong that it can trigger an emotional response? Why is it not just cerebral now?
Well, one of the most interesting things that I've learned, and remember, I am by training not only a psychiatrist but a psychoanalyst, and so I have learned to listen, because the big contribution of psychoanalysis is the quality of listening that a good psychoanalyst learns to engage in. What you do with it later, that's another story, but the quality of listening is very, very important. And one of the things that you listen to as a psychoanalyst is yourself. You listen to your own reactions because you are a reflection tool for what the patient is saying, and you can learn a great deal about what's going on by carefully observing what makes you angry, what makes you happy, what makes you sad, what puts you to sleep, et cetera, et cetera. And so I have learned to listen to my own response level and ask, this is very interesting. Why am I responding this way? For example, we had an issue with our office today, well, actually going back over the last couple of weeks, and my reaction was absolute fury. And so I called Ralph and I said, because Ralph is a trustee of the foundation, and so we are in this together. And I said, I am over responsive. We have to have this and this conversation, and we have to focus on this and this information, but I am responding with anger, and it's going to be destructive, and the interesting thing is, why was I responding with anger? Not that I was right or wrong, but that I was over-responsive, and I've learned to assess that as a key tool to tell me what's going on, in the same way that I use my own response to what's going on, as Ralph said, to help me tread through the muck and the mire and the hidden and the true and the conspiracy and the disinformation and the half information and the and the smokescreen nonsense that's always there. It's not easy, and we can all be wrong.
But the real crux of the issue is here: how do you know that you're wrong, and how do you know that you need to change your beliefs? Because generally, somebody will just come up to me and just tell me a fact that's contrary to my own, and they provide the evidence for it, and I go, "Oh, okay," and I just abandon that previously held belief, and because now I've got a new one that's more correct, and. It's sequential like that, because somebody might come along with a fact in future and tell me that. Because I heard an interesting fact about the information age, and it's probably a long outdated fact, but the concept is still relevant. The information age, the amount of human knowledge that exists, doubles every year. And what that means is potentially, you know, it's pretty unlikely, but potentially, there could be one year where almost everything that everybody's ever discovered turns out to be wrong the next year, because there's that much new stuff coming to light.
You know, let's talk about the half-life of truth. The half-life of medical truth is about 20 years. So 50% of everything that we accept as absolutely inevitably God-given, we've discovered the Holy Grail in this particular area, this is true and will always be true, 50% of that in 20 years is in the dung heap of medical error. That's a very high percentage in a very short time. Now, in political arenas, I would say the half-life of truth is approximately 30 nanoseconds. And then there's the question of whose truth. Well, is it consensus reality truth? Is it hidden agenda truth? For example, if you read Agenda 21 or Agenda 2030, the truth is that it's all about sustainability. It's all about green fields and blue skies and cows lowing in the distance and peaceful humanity romping and playing. The reality is, underneath that truth, that it's about exactly the opposite. It's about dwarfing and diminishing and depopulating humanity, controlling it, lying to it in a permanent, durable lie or set of lies, and about setting up a neo-feudal oligarchy that can do no wrong because it can never be questioned by the proletariat, by the proles, as 1984 would have them. And that is the plan. That's another truth. And then the truth behind that is even more malignant. So it's a question of how deep you want to go into what rabbit hole and at what point your boggle factor has been exceeded and you need a reset.
When the computer's got a virus in it, the virus takes over the operating system. Once you realize you've got a virus, you've got to somehow purge it and then do a reset. You actually have to do a reinstall. So depending on how long you've been believing and living by the rules of pure bullshit, it can take a relatively long time before you actually develop a lifestyle that is devoid of it. You know,
that's
you kind of have to start again.
True. That's
start
absolutely
again.
True. Ralph, you have been fighting freedom's battles in the courts and outside of the courts and keeping a lot of supplement manufacturers out of jail. You keep almost all of them out of jail that you work with. Not quite all. You've been doing this for a long time, and you've been dealing with floods and barrages of government-initiated lies, half-truths, distortions, and selective enforcement. How do you respond to the discussion we're having?
When you're unmuted, of course.
When you're unmuted, yes.
Oh, I'm on mute still. All right. I've been listening and I've been having this discussion with you both, and it's okay. You know, we're on the Vinnie Eastwood show. We expect to have the weirder side of these discussions that we often have on various venues, and sure, that's where we are right now. As I've been saying, I've been talking about things like the way people use language. I mean, they try to hide what they do with the words they use. We've been talking about how there are motives underneath the motives, and you know, this is something that people have got to get a grip on. There are some actors that are being motivated by greed. There are some actors that are being motivated by completely crazy ideals like depopulation. There are some actors who are being motivated by the opportunity to get some sort of power in their hands. And there are some who are motivated by a desire to protect their children from unnecessary toxins, especially in the face of statistics that seem to prove over and over again what is happening. We are raising up generation after generation of diminished humans. You know, this is really the second generation already of heavily vaccinated humans. My generation, the baby boomer generation, if you will, was much less heavily vaccinated than the subsequent two generations. So now we're going to begin to see the fruit of the vaccine enterprise, if you will. Infertility, chronic disease.
Hold on a second. The vaccine enterprise, going where no man has gone before.
I think of it more as like one of those popes. One of the popes said, "This business of Christianity has made us all very wealthy." Well, this business of vaccination has given us all what we want: power, wealth, domination. The ability to make sure that the peasants remain peasants because their brains are too addled to be anything else. The Rockefellers use homeopathy and I'm sure don't vaccinate. But their minions below them, I don't know, they probably vaccinate. Does Bill Gates vaccinate his family? That is a question that we should have answered one of these days.
I certainly hope so. I'm afraid that he does not, but it would be really nice if he did, because we'd have less trouble with them.
And that's a really scary point, Dr. Rima. And it's not just the vaccines that have that effect. It's not just the aluminum that's going to lead to early Alzheimer's. It's also literally the fluoride that's constantly aimed at us, which is a neurotoxin that is meant to specifically do what it does, as you say, to the pineal gland, but certainly it makes people more docile.
I can just imagine this like a vaccine fluoride addled Bill Gates sport. Windows 25. Okay, Windows 25.
It would be instant karma. And that's what the world needs, more karma, I guess.
Well, actually, I think it kind of needs more instant death. You know, it just, to a large degree, this world would be so much better without so many people in it. And there'd be
an expense. Would it be? I don't know about that.
I think there'd be
how can any of us make that choice?
We can't make that. We can't make that choice. However,
not to have children. But why?
You know why bad people don't get assassinated? Because good people by trade generally aren't assassins, nor can they hire them, nor would they kill them if they had the chance. Okay, but you know how it's all the good people that keep getting assassinated, right? And I'm just talking hypothetically. There's no way to actually pull this kind of thing off without becoming a tyrant or having a terrible thing. But how much has humanity been held back by psychopaths who kill the best of us? And what would a world look like?
Psychopaths, Vinny, not just private psychopaths. No. Let's remember that the 20th century began with an epic-level bloodletting that almost singled out the best and the brightest of European civilization and wiped out an entire generation of, you know, poets and artists and writers and scientists.
Let me point out that among the 30 million, that's 30 million people that were killed under Stalin, anyone who was of above average intelligence was singled out to be killed. And young people, children and adolescents who were unusually attractive were also killed because it was believed that they might be more intelligent than the average. And anyone who was more intelligent than the average was susceptible to becoming an enemy of the state. So not only did they kill people who were doing things that they didn't like, they were killing people who might do things. And that brings us to pre-crime. The New York City Police Department and other police departments in the United States and elsewhere are now, just as in the movie with Nicolas Cage, the name of which I just forgot, but just as in the movie,
Face Off.
Different one. It'll come to me in a second. In that movie, there are pre-crime punishments. If you're thinking about or you might commit a crime, then you are isolated and you are treated as if you have committed the crime. And that's where we're moving to. So killing the best.
Hey, you know, didn't Jimmy Carter lust in his mind?
Yes, he did. And lusting in your mind has been a no-no since the perpetrators of religion and mind control noticed that people had minds. that's been
I think that's why confession is a good thing. Like, you know how we have to get out some of these things that we've done or things that we've said or things that we regret or whatever, and it actually makes you feel better just to have shared it with somebody?
Well, when you owe your moral allegiance to that person and they get to decide your state of goodness or badness, that's not confession, that's possession.
Well, I don't need it. I don't know you need anything like that. I've got mates and I've got beer.
Yeah. And I've got Ralph and Bert, so I'm cool.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I've got a sacrament. You've got one too. And just because my religion doesn't have an incredibly expensive church and you're not allowed to smoke cigarettes in it doesn't mean that my religion is any less valuable, okay?
Well, in the photograph that I see of you on Skype, not only do you have a shield, and not only are you screaming some berserker war cry, but you have a large hemp leaf emblazoned on your chest. And I would say that sacrament system might be memorialized in that photo.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, I wouldn't want to get cannabinoid deficient, would I?
No. No, certainly not.
Well, now the question is, can you be cannabinoid deficient, or is it...
Well, I don't know. You're starting to cannabinoid me now.
You know, you can't be deficient in THC because THC is not normally part of your body, but you can be deficient in CBDs because CBDs are normally part of your body. I'm not, you know, particularly against either, but I'm... as a person interested in healing, much more in favor of the cannabidiol as opposed to the tetrahydrocannabinol. And folks, if you want to learn more about CBDs as part of a healthy lifestyle, Dr. Rima has written extensively about it. You can go. We published a paper. You can go to inhere.org, inhere.org. You'll see the open source journal there, and there's an article on cannabidiol. Dr. Rima calls it the holy grail of natural health, and it's the part of hemp that is all healing and doesn't get you high, although I have to say it does have a calming effect.
Yeah, and on top of that, I was thinking cannabidiol should be the first thing that should be franchised to something you can, like, order over the phone, you know? You can just cannabidiol it up.
and then
it'll arrive at your door.
Yeah, our CBD product is within weeks of being on the market. In the meantime, we are providing CBDs to that other companies produce. And I've been using a CBD hemp vape for about 6 months, you can get those as well. If you go, there is a webpage, subpage on our drrimatruthreports.com that's about CBD products, and it's, you go right to that main page, it's just below the banner, there's a link to CBD availability, I think it says. And there are a couple of different ways that we can help you get your CBDs, including the hemp vape. I think the hemp vape has been very effective in helping me control some joint discomfort that I was feeling. And I've tested it myself by stopping for several days running to see what would happen. And these discomforts come back. So the supplementation by drawing, using a little vape pen and drawing the CBD enriched hemp oil into my mouth, and of course swallowing, because, you know, I wouldn't want to ever say I would inhale it, because gosh, that might make it a drug delivery system, and this is a dietary supplement, so I draw it into my mouth and I swallow it as a good dietary supplement should be. You know, Vinny, the government of the United States, in all of its mystic glory, hath decreed nutrition may only be ingested. You can't receive nutrition through your skin, for example. Transdermal nutrition existeth not, for the law hath spoken. And, you know, reality is what the law hath spoken, not the fact that when you put the stuff on your skin, it actually goes into your bloodstream and is actually nourishing. I mean, that doesn't really happen. It can't happen. Congress of the United States said, you know, nutrition is ingested, and therefore that's it. You know, your mind should not ever entertain anything that is separate from what authority has spoken.
I guess once they find out a way to turn Prozac into a cream that you can rub on your temples when you start to want to not feel human anymore, I think then they'll relax the laws on that particular vein of thinking.
Perhaps.
Well, if you rub it onto your temples and you tell anybody that it has any effect, it's now no longer a dietary supplement. You now have an untested drug, and the Fraud and Death Administration of the United States government is now on your tail. Big time.
The Fraud and Death Administration. It sounds German, yeah?
Yeah, well, it is. You know, so many of the...
Fraud and Death.
The Fraud and Death Administration. Fraud und
no,
death.
No. Freud und Death.
Yeah, well, they were actually, they were lovers.
And when you think about it, it is the German pharmaceutical industry that led the way to this perfect day led the way to Codex Alimentarius, led the way to dangerous pharmaceutical drugs. Mr. Rockefeller's oil and German ingenuity created all of it.
Well, you know, I guess we've got to be, everybody's got a talent.
Yes.
You know, some people have a talent for many different things. John D. Rockefeller Jr. had a talent for understanding how to destabilize and control an entire society. He only lived to be 94. Had he used his own pharmaceuticals, he might have lived a lot less long, but he used homeopathy for his entire life, having learned about it from his father, the herbalist and homeopath. And so he lived a long and healthy, destructive, and incredibly damaging life for his 94 years, leaving the legacy to his family, including David Rockefeller, who famously thanked the press for their compliance, because otherwise, he said, it would not have been possible to basically take over the entire world society and structure had the New York Times, and he mentioned several other newspapers, not chosen to go along with the agenda. It's a very famous quote. You can find it on the internet. And he is a true scion of the Rockefeller insanity.
And I think that these things have deep roots, and they have now kind of a pervasive, all-encompassing presence. And I think that's basically the goal of globalism in and of itself, to project one idea and one control structure everywhere.
Right.
Oh, absolutely. And David Rockefeller said it was this was – so useful in ushering in the new world order, a phrase which Bill Clinton has used, which Obama
George
has
H. W.
used,
Bush.
Bush has used, George W. Bush has used. They all use it because it seems as if these insane ones have some rules they follow. And one of the rules appears to be they have to tell us what they're going to do before they do it. And then if we don't figure it out and stop them, it's fair game.
Holy shit. They are the Riddler. You know how the Riddler always leaves little clues in his crime scene? He'll never figure this one out.
Exactly. You're too stupid to figure this one out. But it, when you think about...
You'll never figure out my dastardly plan, Batman.
Yes, precisely. Precisely. Batman and Robin are not incidental figures. Shall we say that all of these iconic
archetypes.
Figures...
Archetypes.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say something else. They're iconic figures which embody archetypes. And once those figures are manipulated, then the archetype is perceived unconsciously by us as doing whatever it was that the iconic figure, the Batman, the Robin, the Superman, the whatever, is doing. So you can take the strength of the archetype at the unconscious level, and they're very powerful. They program us very deeply, and you can manipulate it by using it as a sock puppet, essentially, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I wonder if, you know, Noah was somebody who put great use in archetypes, didn't he?
Noah?
Yeah, because he built an archetype.
He did. He built a type of arca. That's where the word comes from, archetype.
Yeah. And is that when it goes in 2x2?
Vinny, what I just said, you know how you know it's true?
How?
The type of arca? Because you can trust me, I'm a doctor.
Type of arca? It sounds like some kind of tapioca pudding.
It is, actually. Yes.
What kind of tapioca is that? Oh, it's a type of arca tapioca. Oh, okay.
And it comes from southern India. Yes, it's a matter of fact.
It's an archetype of tapioca from southern India. I'm sorry, folks. We're just getting really silly at this point. You know, and in fact,
I'm sorry to say, Vinny. I have to get up really early tomorrow. This is one of 2 weeks a year that my wife's son and I volunteer to help with a local animal rescue charity. We have a big yard sale, big yard sale, 20,000 people wandering through this coming weekend. And I have to help get some things down to the site early tomorrow morning so I can get back at a reasonable hour and actually conduct business. So I can't stay on this interesting.
We have 20 minutes left. So you can either leave now and go to leave now and go to bed, or you can stick it out for 20 minutes and sit there on mute, not being able to really talk because you're too tired. I mean, what's it?
Don't leave me, Ralph. Don't leave me with him.
I'm going to crawl through my microphone. I'm going to sit here with my hemp vape. I'll just puff hemp. That's all.
He's going to crawl through the little holes in my microphone and show up here in Chile.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Vinny Eastwood Show, a way in which no matter who we interview, in a roundabout way, the conversation always comes back to weed.
Well,
it does. The last three guests, like you and Ralph and everybody, and like in the whole week, I've organised the guests like literally at the last minute, and every single conversation in some roundabout way has turned into cannabis. And
get a new picture that doesn't have the huge weed leaf, and it might be different.
Right, exactly.
It might be subliminal. I am subliminally making people think about ganja. This is awesome. Thank you. Now I know.
Yeah, that's
Anytime. It's all mind control.
Well, I mean, if there are things that you can make people think about in a very subtle fashion, something that's never killed anybody in like between 10 and 26,000 years of recorded usage, I guess you could do worse.
No, it's very bad. Weed is very bad because weed, like any other natural substance that people choose to use for themselves without the control of the pharmaceutical industry, gives people the idea that they're free, gives people the idea that they are actually autonomous and that they are not cogs and property of the state, and we can't have that.
We certainly can't, and I've been getting quite frustrated on this issue for a number of years, basically because it's affected me personally. Funny how that happens, isn't it? When an issue affects you personally for the rest of your life, every time someone mentions it, it affects you still. And I think at the moment there's just so much progress in the world on this front, legalizing it for recreational use, for medicinal use, the rise of CBD being talked about all over the place, even you know, just previously on this very broadcast. And the only place that seems to not be showing any progress whatsoever is New Zealand, a place where between 10 and 20% of people smoke cannabis. We spend the largest amount of money per capita on the cannabis laws, and we arrest more people per capita than anybody else. You know?
You arrest more people than the United States?
No, per capita.
Where one person in 100 is behind bars, and 25% of them are behind bars for nonviolent drug offenses.
For arrests. For arrests, not imprisonment. However, our prison population is growing because, just like the United States, Serco has now taken over our prison population. And they're doing such a fantastic job at denying their prisoners access to things like proper food, toilet paper, the essentials, things like that. The government is now saying that these people would be really great if they ran all of our social services as well.
Wow.
We're getting the best of both worlds. Bureaucracy and crony corporatism. Oh, how wonderful.
Now, who better to manage, giving the poor access to money that their taxes paid for to provide them with than somebody who runs prisons for a living and keeps people as slaves in stock, you know? And also, incidentally, the government has given them license to slave out these people for 50 cents an hour. to do any private company's bidding, you know, whatever they want. You know, you've got a contract, you want to clean up the streets or something like that, you want to pick up trash, you want to do anything, you can just use these prisoners 50 cents an hour. And also, we're going to tighten up the laws so that the media can't go and interview people in these prisons either.
Well, that's very important, because we want to make sure that we have people who are imprisoned without any opportunity to make their voices heard so that they can be buried alive. That sounds wonderful to me.
Strawberry alive.
You know, it is an indication of a completely failed social system. Not unlike what's happening with American soldiers and veterans, where some 20 or so a day are killing themselves. You know, when an empire needs to hide its failures, the empire is failing. Hey, look, the Soviet Union collapsed because Russian males were living shorter and shorter lives even after the end of the Stalinist era. And we're about to see that, if I can suggest, among all of our populations. That's why General Burt wrote that very powerful ebook that the, you know, on the Great Culling Has Begun. The ebook goes over in detail the way in which the Great Culling is being engineered, and the way in which the peak of population is turning. I suspect that with the manipulation of population figures, we are being lied to, and that the population crash is already beginning. But we shall see over the next few years.
There's so many sterilants and kind of covert depopulation agendas going simultaneously without the awareness of the public that it's not long before most of the generations that are born henceforth will be born sterile.
Apparently I was on mute. One of the things that's really, really
important. Can you speak up, Rima? We're having a little bit of trouble here.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. One of the things that's really important to question, we were talking earlier
about.
Now there's
that popping sound again. It's really weird. It's like we want to hear you, but when we can, it's like the.
How about now?
That's actually quite nice.
Okay, good. I like it. One of the things that is very important, and we were talking earlier about how you know when it's time to give up something that you have believed for a long time. One of the things that's quite important is the question of whether there is overpopulation or whether it's a myth. Now, when I was in school and I was very, very poor, I would give $1 a month to Greenpeace and $1 a month to zero population growth, even though that literally meant not eating for me. I was willing to do that. And then...
Well, that's so leading by example, isn't it?
Isn't it? So, I was quite affiliated with the idea that there is an overpopulation crisis. And I was reluctant but willing to listen to the other argument. I would recommend anybody who believes that there is, in fact, a population crisis, that there is overpopulation on this planet, needs to go to a website called overpopulationisamyth.com, with which I have no affiliation. I just happen to think it's an extremely interesting site. Take a look at that. And then think about the fact that in the entire so-called first world, population is falling, birth rates are falling, fertility as planned is falling. There are places where the population is going up, but they are not the first world, they are the third world. And in those places, young children die from things that are unnecessary, like waterborne diseases and so on. The issue is not too many people. The issue is an unwillingness to distribute resources and develop the resources that are available in those areas in an equitable way. And the issue of depopulation, like the issue of the Disney measles outbreak, is manipulated and managed to achieve the goal of getting you to agree to reduce the population, including you and your children, because it's necessary. Sadly, ecology and the whole ecological movement was also created by the same people who created the myth of overpopulation, and that is the Rockefeller Foundation. John D. Rockefeller funded the creation of the myth of overpopulation. He funded the creation of the ecology movement. Now, I believe in maintaining the earth in a responsible and wholesome manner. No question about that. But the entire ecology movement is designed to get you to come to the point where you are willing to turn 99% of the earth's surface back to the wild, to be rewilded so that animals can take over the earth once again. And that is part of Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030. You will be compressed into transit villages in order to give space to the wild creatures, which are now being said to have the same rights as human beings. The Japanese government has now begun the process of giving dolphins equal rights to people. The Indian government has given elephants equal rights to people. And while that sounds like an advance, actually what it is part of the globalist agenda to make your rights subordinate to their interests. It has nothing to do with being nice to dolphins or to elephants. It has everything to do with taking your rights away, because you as a human being have to be controlled and eliminated. That's the agenda.
And it's something that's kind of pursued without regard to its cost. Like, even if they're dying as a result of what they're desiring to do, they'll still do it, isn't it?
It would appear that way. It would appear that way. The word crazy, insane, mad, those words are so tiny compared to the magnitude of their wild insanity that normal people cannot wrap their minds around it, in the same way that even you, Vinny, cannot wrap your mind fully around the concept of how destructive these people are.
Well, I wouldn't want to.
No, indeed. But, you know, as
in fact, that's a realization I had at one point. The only way you can fully comprehend somebody who's absolutely crazy is to actually go a little bit crazy trying to find out.
Yes, indeed. And it's not a pleasant experience, by the way. So you can spare yourself that by just letting Vinny and Ralph and me and General Bert be crazy for you.
Yeah. We bring you the crazy, and just so that you don't have to go get it yourself, all right?
That's right. That's right. And we spend our lives doing something very, very difficult, and that is ferreting out truth and trying to understand it in the context of all the other truths that we understand. And that way, you don't have to, but you do have to take action. You do have to reorganize and rearrange what you do in order to make that meaningful for you.
I like the idea of ferreting out the truth, like with some kind of hardy marsupial trying to get at the eggs.
It is. That's exactly what we are. We are actually truthsupials, and we have a pouch attached to our ventral surface. Whenever we come across a truth egg, we put it in the pouch, and then we gestate it, and we let it talk to all the other truth eggs, and out pops a new truth form.
Yes, indeed. It comes into view. And this is the problem with being obsessed with truth, is that from time to time, people come up and question you, go like, how come you're not saying the same things you were a couple years ago? You go, well, Maybe because, unlike you, I'm obsessed with truth rather than appearing to be correct.
Do you know what one of these eggs, these truth eggs, is actually called in the scientific world?
No.
Because of what it eventually becomes, the communication system that it matures into, it's called a blogosphere.
Oh, okay. There are a lot of eggs on the blogosphere, that's for damn sure. I think that also the alternative media needs to have a increased self-analysis of its own actions. How, you know, I mean, even the listeners and everything, how we react to people, how we're talking to people on Facebook, how we're pushing our ideas, what ideas we're own susceptible to. Are we bullshitting ourselves half the time and just getting aggressive with people because they're right and our brain doesn't want us to accept that they're right, because that means you'd have to actually change something about yourself in order to continue to justify your existence and your lifestyle. It's a hard realization, but unfortunately you don't have a choice. Dr. Rima Labo from Dr. Rima Truth Reports and Ralph Fusatola from the Natural Solutions Foundation have been my guests, and we will see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Please make a donation and start donating a few dollars a month to keep us on the airwaves and keep this truth coming on at you. See you again sometime.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
What kind of person are you? How do you see yourself? Are you the kind of person that lets everyone else do all the work, just hoping that you'll be able to get some of the crumbs that fall from the table? Or are you the kind of person that rolls up their sleeves and does the dirty jobs that no one else wants to do? Are you hoping that all the activists giving their blood, sweat, and tears to serve humanity are going to solve all the world's problems? Or are you just wondering, is there something simple I can do to contribute? Yes. Yes, there is. Help us. Help us do what we do. Partner up with American Freedom Radio today by gifting a regular amount to support the network and your favorite hosts, bringing you less commercials and more information. Go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and start donating today from between $1 and $100 per month, according to the kind of person you are. Thank you very much for your support.
We are living in a new era. Partnerships are more important than profit, and gratitude is more respected than greed. As the millennial generation evolves the corporate landscape, our company aims to maximize the achievements of CBD application and push the limits of what's possible by 2020. Our core product matrix and careful cannabidiol purification process are uniquely designed to be privately made in different regions of the world and is geared to assist the efforts of different nations to change the landscape, various pain-related healthcare costs, epilepsy and autism, rising mental disorders, and even soldier suicides. Crystal Pure CBD is made with the industry's finest 99.9% pure CBD crystals. No paste, no filler. Our solution is a permanent answer, and it saves you over one-third in cost. Crystal Pure CBD. Come join us.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccine, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics,
no taboo topics,
no fear of doom,
no fear of doom.
We are
American Freedom Radio,
American Freedom Radio.